This week's episode of Radio Labyrinth is produced by Wendy Muller, Mike Spittler, Sean Hall, Jonathan Wilson, Andrew Hopkins, and Keith Tate.
The land of the dead is inhabiting the land of the living.
Hey, the dead.
Can it wait?
Can it wait? Those were the days.
That's evil.
It's time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Jeff Leboff, Stephanie Swain, Autumn Fisher, and sometimes effing Ira Malkin.
Hello and welcome to a very special Halloween episode of Radio Labyrinth, episode 149. We have a guest on our show. Our guest is Janet Varney, the Emmy-nominated actor, comedian, writer, and producer. You know her from Cora on Nickelodeon's critically acclaimed standout hit, The Legend of Cora. She can currently be seen as the entitled and bitchy Becca on FXX's You're the Worst, and on one of our favorite shows, also starring John C. McGinley on the IFC Network, Dana Gould's Stand Against Evil. Local peeps may remember Janet from her wonderful years hosting TBS's Dinner in a Movie, and she's been on a host of other television shows, like the list is way too long to read. So, on with the show. Now entering Radio Labyrinth, Janet Varney.
Hey, all right.
Yay, welcome, Janet.
She is on one of my wife's favorite shows and one of my favorite shows.
And one of my favorite shows.
But they're not the same show.
Oh, see, gotcha, see. Right?
Yes, my wife and you enjoy You're the Worst.
Love it.
And Jeff and I, apparently you, like Stand Against Evil. So thank you for coming on.
My pleasure, guys. So far, I don't feel too lost in this maze of a conversation. So I'm feeling very confident that I'm going to make it out alive.
Awesome.
And Stand Against Evil comes back on Halloween on IFC.
It does indeed.
So you guys record. You guys shoot that show right here in Atlanta, and I've seen a lot of, around the area. So how long does the shooting schedule take, and how long do you spend in the city?
Well, you know, it's pretty fast and furious, not to be confused with the film.
Which are also shot in Atlanta.
But it is pretty fast. You know, we especially John and Dana and I do a lot of other things, and because IFC has, you know, kind of the reputation for being spectacularly fun and great to work with, because they do engender so much power and creativity among the people that they make their shows with. But, you know, I think in exchange, you're sort of not operating with like an NBC budget. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like creative accounting. That makes it sound like we all are in the mafia, but it's not that creative. It's not the threatening creative kind. And so we really jam a bunch into a fairly short period of time. And for me, it's something that I've kind of come to love. I wouldn't say I've ever been the person who enjoys, you know, like, for example, I think I would be Stanley Kubrick's worst nightmare and he mine, because this idea of just sort of getting into this state where you're doing 200 takes of the same moment, I don't know that I could survive that. My understanding of it is that you sort of do it and then you kind of become crazy and then eventually you come out on the other side sane. I don't know. But I like that we do, you know, a few takes of something and then we move on to a new setup, because it keeps us on our feet. And I think the cliche that a lot of actors say about waiting kind of being the most boring hard part is very true. It's hard to kind of keep your energy up, especially if you're supposed to be, you know, a sheriff, and I use that term very loosely, a sheriff fighting demons, you know, and where everything is kind of high stakes. I think it's actually nice when the speed of the shoot kind of marries with that energy, rather than like, okay, you just sit around for 6 hours and then you get up and say a few things and then you go sit down for another hour, you know.
Do you get to see any of Atlanta while you're in town?
I do. I have a little bit less. I tend to work every day. John and I both tend to work every day that we're there. So we don't have as much downtime during the weeks as sometimes Deborah and Nate do. Their workload is a little bit lighter. And so Deborah has really become my ambassador of all things Atlanta, which is to say she will like scope out stuff on the weekdays that maybe I haven't seen yet or that she thinks I would love. And then on the weekends, I kind of have more of a curated set of activities that I can do, which I'm so grateful for, because although I worked in Atlanta for many years shooting dinner and a movie, really over when, you know, it was sort of like Tyler Perry and TNT and the TBS family were really the only games in town. The city has changed so much since those slightly earlier days, since, you know, everything kind of became Hollywood, the Hollywood of the East.
I forgot about dinner and a movie.
There's always so much stuff.
That was a fun dinner. I forgot about that. Dinner and a movie was a lot of fun.
That's where I saw her first.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Me too.
I loved dinner and a movie. I was wondering.
Beans and cornbread had a fight.
That's right.
I was wondering if you've ever thought about doing another like comedic cooking show, because there's nothing like that on. I mean, most of them kind of either they take themselves too seriously or it's kind of cheesy. I would love to see you do something like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, funny you say that. Yeah, I did. When dinner and a movie ended, I did pitch a couple of different things with a couple of different people, including Claude Mann and I were pitching something together. But it's hard. Yeah, those are hard shows to get made, I think. It's either they want somebody who's like already kind of a celebrity chef in a very specific kind of Guy Fieri sort of way, or they want it to really be like you said, kind of more of a hardcore like cooking show that doesn't have as much playfulness to it. So that never really materialized, but I agree with you. I think it would be fun to have, you know, the things like Nailed It, you know, on Netflix, which I only watched a little bit of, but I thought was so funny and charming. I think you're right. There's really room for more of that. And we had a blast doing it. It was a really fun job. It was kind of my first big, ongoing job when I switched over to do this kind of showbiz thing full time. And then it's it.
Getting back to Stan versus Evil, I wanted to ask you if you've seen any of Wellington Paranormal. Have you heard about it or seen any of it?
No, I know.
You need to check it out. It's I can't pronounce the guy's name. The guy that made
T.I.Q. What, T.T. or
something?
Yeah. Taika Waititi?
He made the Thor movie.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And it's like an offshoot of that, and it's about these two cops who go around New Zealand and just arrest, like, paranormal vampires.
Oh,
and,
God. I will love this. Thank you so much for telling me about it.
Dana needs to get his lawyers involved, because it's a total ripoff of Stan Against Evil.
Well, that, you know, that's another thing where I feel like there's so much room for funny and scary stuff kind of merging. And I feel like, you know, Dana made me laugh so hard the other day. I don't know why. I've never heard him say this before, but he was like, if I wanted to rip off Ash vs. Evil Dead, do you think I would have been stupid enough to pick a name called Stand Against Evil? He's like, I wasn't even thinking about it. Like, he's friends with Bruce, and he had, like, no thought about it whatsoever. He was like, oh shit, people are going to compare these. Right. Because once you get into that kind of, those more niche, limited genres, everything kind of starts to feel, especially when you have, and I haven't seen Wellington Paranormal, but if you have a sort of monster of the week things where, you know, maybe the emphasis is more on funny than scary, I think it's easier to make those comparisons. Whereas the more there's a ton of something in a certain genre, the less likely it is that we're going to, you know, our brains are going to need to make those comparisons. But, man, Taika Waititi, like, that Thor Ragnarok part of that franchise is, to me, it's hands down the funniest, like, funnier than Guardians. Like, it's just my sense of humor all day long.
Yeah, he was great in it, and his character was hilarious in that film.
Oh,
summer.
God, his character. Just talking that taste as a Chinese. Yeah. Just, like, amazing, perfect, like, well, wouldn't it be funny if I had this voice, but I was, like, the biggest scariest thing ever?
And I don't think you can compare Stand Against Evil with you know, the Evil Dead show, because it's completely different, and it's really, it's hard for me to describe. I like them both, and I like Bobcat's show that was that just finished. What was that called, Jeff?
It was Misfits and Monsters.
Misfits and Monsters, yeah.
Yeah, we love Bobcat. He's best, yeah.
And in Dana put together the show, it's very funny, but there's also a touching humanity, if not to sound too pompous, but there's a touching humanity in it that I...
Listen, we'll take it. You make us sound better, so be as pompous as you want.
Okay.
Like Dana's stand-up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, so much of what Bobcat does is very full of heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those two are friends, and I'm such a huge fan of Bobcat. And yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we sort of joke that... that Ash versus Evil Dead seems more like it's the popular kids at school that are like, right, rock and roll and cool, and that we are much more like, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say that I think that it's like, oh, you know, it's like a Walking Simpsons episode, but I think the total absurdity and just outright goofiness that Dana brought to The Simpsons is definitely what I feel comes through so clearly, you know, and season three is not an exception to that. I would say that it is the best example of that, because it shit just get real wacky.
Did you get any more of a bigger budget for season three, or
I mean, I doubt it.
Yeah,
it didn't feel like we had more money. <than that>.
And you enjoy working with David Koechner?
Oh yeah, I love Koechner. I've known him for, gosh, he came and did my comedy festival, maybe the third year that we had it, and we're now going into our 18th year this January.
This is Sketchfest.
Yeah, this is Sketchfest in San Francisco. I saw Sketchfest, and he came and did a show that he used to do a lot, that I think was a show on Comedy Central for a hot minute too, called The Naked Trucker. And it was a band that he was in, where he and, oh my God, I can't believe I'm blanking on Dave Gruber Allen. Dave Gruber Allen, who was a teacher in Freaks and Geeks. He plays the naked trucker. And so he's basically naked playing guitar, but his guitar is covering his, junk.
Right.
And then Koechner is the other singer who's being this, unsurprisingly, given other things we've seen him do, this redneck character. And they were so funny and great. And so, yeah, I've just known him ever since. So when he came on to do the show, I was so psyched, even though I cannot understand why Evie would marry Kenny.
And he looks like he's coming back this season three.
He is.
Reprise his role as her husband.
He's coming back, and he really transforms, and not in a good way.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And I think I saw Scott Adsit, maybe Eddie Pepitone, yes! Maria Bamford.
Yes. Yeah, we really, and Matt Bronger. Yeah, we really pulled out a bunch of our friends and our favorite comedians this season as well. Yeah, everybody was so great. Yeah, Pepitone and Koechner in the same episode. It's our Godzilla King Kong homage. And Scott plays this sort of like demon schmo kind of character. Nice. That is so great. And then, yeah, we have a super creepy hospital episode that I'm actually not in that much. And I'm kind of glad that I am not, because I was super, like... I love all the monsters and all the special effects makeup we do, but I'm typically more in awe of it than I am disturbed by it. And then when I saw Maria Bamford come out of the trailer, I was like, I couldn't look at her. I could not look at her, because I adore her, and her makeup is so gruesome and just so awful that I mean, they really outdid themselves.
I can't wait to see
those. I was afraid I was going to have nightmares.
Season 3 debuts on Halloween. You get episodes 1 and 2 back-to-back, and that is
IFC.
Going to be awesome on IFC.
And speaking of IFC, you also have a show in the IFC Comedy Crib. Also,
I do.
Scott Adsit appears on that as well.
Yeah, listen, it's just another situation where I just called a bunch of people that I know and love and have been fortunate enough to work with in the past and said, do you want to come do this weird thing where I play a version of myself who decides to quit showbiz to become a fortune teller, and I do not have any of the skills necessary, nor do I have psychic powers, it would appear, even though it seems like I've been told that I do have psychic powers, because that's what prompts me to quit, is a psychic operating out of a bathroom. And we never see the backstory on that. That we're sort of saving that for season two. Tells me that I'm psychic, and while I have had zero faith in anything mystical up to that point, this version of me apparently is egotistical enough that, like, just being told I'm special, I'm like, that must be true.
And I love that James Roday is mad at you because you're honing in on his psych business.
That's right. Yeah, when I started writing it, I mean, I started writing it many years ago, kind of as a half hour, you know, single camera show where I didn't play myself at all. I just, you know, it was fully fictional characters. And over time, it kind of morphed into something different where, like, there was a point at which I was pitching it to have almost like a Daily Show component where I would be interviewing real psychics and kind of finding out what, you know, in the guise of like, teach me. And then that got kind of really depressing to imagine. Like, oh no, I don't know if I want to have these like weird interactions with people who might be swindlers. and so then it took its current shape. And when I was writing it, I was just thinking about how funny it would be if James kind of stormed in and was angry that, it's just the meta, you know what I mean? Like, right. We live in such a meta world and environment right now in entertainment, and people, I think, kind of love being, especially in alternative comedy, they just love being in on the joke. And so that's, you know, we really played with that in such a fun way. And James was so game. Like me, I think he prefers to play jerks. So, yeah, and then Tim was in it, and
how's he doing? He's recovering.
From
Deadwood.
Oh god, that's the first time I can remember seeing him, and I was just blown away. He could just be a character in any period of time. He has one of those timeless faces.
Dreamcatcher.
That's right. You get it.
Yeah.
He just has that. He has that face, but. He's a great, I mean, he unsurprisingly to anyone who knows him and probably unsurprisingly even to just fans, but he bounced back to a level that, you know, his doctors were like incredulous about how quickly he kind of started recovering, and all of those stories you hear about, like, you know, oh, you'll never do this again, you'll never do that again. And then he just plowed through all of that and just continues to get better. And I think, you know, you sort of hope that your progress is just going to lead to you being 100% normal in a short period of time, and he's not there yet, but
he looked great, God, though.
Inspiring. Oh yeah, he's so inspiring, and he's improved so much even since we shot that, because we shot that in the spring,
right?
And when we did our premiere, he's so much better even than that. So it was great. He and his whole family are just massively inspiring to me, and his positivity, and yeah, so that was a kind of a fun way to celebrate him in that way. And yeah, having Scott, and, you know, having puppetry or you know, sort of paper doll hallucinations and
Steve,
boy
Steve
aging
Agee,
boy yeah. band Steve Agee yeah. running ice cream in the ice cream shop. It was the opportunity to just take a bunch, you know. The hardest thing about it was, oh my god, there's like 200 more people that I want to put in this. So I'm very hopeful that we'll get to do longer and with a bigger budget.
That'd be great. Hey, and that's Fortune Rookie on IFC.com. And you can also go to FortuneRookie.net and JanetVarney.com. I think you can see Fortune Rookie on there also.
Yeah, it's even on YouTube. All the apps are on YouTube too. So cool. If you're a YouTuber, you can go there.
Do you ever get caught in those YouTube vortices where you just watch one thing and then you look up and it's 3 hours later?
I do, and I try so hard. I'm really bad on social media for the exact same reason, because I absolutely will, like, drop down into that and then completely forget that I'm a living being that needs to like eat and go to the bathroom. So
right. Well, you have a phone. You can take it in there with you.
Oh, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
And before we let you go, we got to ask a couple questions about You're the Worst.
Oh, definitely.
Coming back in January.
Yes.
Any date or anything? Nobody knows for sure yet.
I don't know. And to be honest with you, I didn't pay attention. And so I just, for a minute after we wrapped, I was just blithely telling people like, well, it usually comes back in the fall. Right. So look out for it. And then I thought, wait, that's maybe not an informed thing I'm saying. And so I checked with Fox PR, and they said that they were looking at a January release, but they didn't have a date yet. So yeah, I just did some ADR for that show today, and so I got a sneak peek at the last couple of episodes that I was in. Wait, that's not true. About 2/3 in. I was gonna say, I don't think one of the episodes we have feels very final, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh, that's like episode 8, so never mind. But yeah, some of my favorite episodes actually that we did this season, I got to do some ADR for today, and it was really fun to see, you know, some scenes cut together. Because for us, that's usually the first and only time we get to see anything before it actually comes out.
Janet, do you when you're not working, and it sounds like you work constantly, what are some of the movies or TV shows your go-tos if you're going to binge, or something that you've already seen but you love it so much you'll watch it again and again?
Well, I am like some other female comedians I know. I am a crime murder procedural junkie. I think because it is not. Comedy is not relaxing for me, and that's not a knock on comedy. It's just because it's primarily what I do, and because I enjoy writing, and I have a real interest in directing and all that kind of stuff. It's just hard not to see the machinery of it, and that's a good thing. But it's not much of an escape, you know. So
right.
For me, I tend to I don't really watch like network 1-hour procedurals, but I'm certainly of the camp of like, I subscribe to like 2 different British apps where I can watch all the stuff that we don't see in the States, where, you know, I'm watching either like gentle British mysteries featuring like quirky old people detectives or the sort of more like,
Broadchurch.
You know, oh, wow. Another child was brutally murdered in the Scottish Highlands.
Oh, is that Broadchurch?
Yeah. You're like, oh, my, like you're waffling between like, oh, my God, this is so grim. But, oh, to have a cottage there, wouldn't that just be heaven?
What was that one, Missing? They did 2 seasons of it where it was the French detective.
I totally watched it.
Yeah. What a great actor that guy was.
Yeah, the first season had, oh, God, what's his name? I have such a crush on him. James. He was also in the reimagining of Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh, I know who you're talking. I just don't. Name escapes me right this second.
Every Irish actor's name is James. So,
do you listen to a lot of the true crime podcasts?
Well, I do. I don't listen to. I love Karen and Georgia, but again, like I think of their sort of peers in the comedy world. So I don't listen to their podcast because for me that again is like, oh, I might as well just. Be hanging out with friends, but I do listen to, I'm sure, every podcast they talk about and listen to. I listen to, I'm a huge Undisclosed fan, I'm a huge Bob Ruff fan, I like Generation Y a lot.
Oh, that's a good show. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, that's it too. Yeah, if you look in my podcast feed, you would think that I was a serial killer.
same here.
And what's right? going on with the JV Club? You're on hiatus right now?
I went on hiatus because I wanted to switch networks.
That's what I was wondering, if you were moving networks or not.
I was traveling so much doing shows with Paul F. Tompkins and stuff that I just kind of, and so I thought, well, you know, here's a perfect time for me to just take a break. I'll finish Boys of Summer and then I'll take a break and I'll start my move over to the podcast network I'm going to. And then like a couple weeks later, Nerdist just kind of shut down all their podcasts. So I was like, well, I'm glad I already had that in the works.
So,
I actually already have some episodes banked and I am just kind of figuring out which one I want to make my 300th episode so that I can come back. But I think, I mean, I don't know that we've officially announced it, but I just did Jordan Jesse Go a couple of weeks ago on the Max Fun Network with Jesse Thorne and Jordan Morris. And I think we essentially intimated that that's where I was going to end up. And I don't think it'll surprise anyone who listens to my podcast that that's the network I'm headed to. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited to come back. And, you know, it's funny, like, again, because I've still been recording, I keep forgetting that those episodes aren't getting pushed out into the world. So I'm like, wait, no, I'm still, nothing's changed. Oh, yeah, no one has heard anything from me. Got it. Got it.
You know, speaking of podcasts, I just want to kind of thank you for doing the mental illness happy hour 5 years ago. I mean, I know it was a long time ago, and people can always go back and listen to it. I know Jeff sent it to me with a YouTube link, but it's just so important to talk about stuff like that and to sort of normalize it for people who feel like they're alone. And I just think it's really brave of you to talk about it so openly. And I know Paul is like an open book with all that stuff too.
But, No, it's my pleasure. And I always tell people, if you want to, if you liked that and you, it's not as specific as what Paul's doing, but I would say that, mental health, because I talk to people about their teenage years and because that was such a huge part of mine, it comes up all the time,
right,
on my podcast as well. And I think there's also something kind of fun about being able to like touch on it and make fun of it and then also talk about other stuff. So
sure. It takes the power out of it, like the venom out of it.
Absolutely. And that's something that I think that for me was like the number one thing I now understand about it, as I've lived with stuff for a lot longer, is I still get those feelings. You know, I can still feel like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I feel a panic attack coming on, right, or I can feel, which if you listen to that episode, you know, for me is like being high. It's not like just like Tony Soprano like passing out. It's like, oh, I'll just feel like I'm on acid for the rest of my life. This is what this feels like.
That's what it feels like. It sucks. I hate it.
It's a real strong experience to have in the world, if that's like how it manifests itself. And so I can still feel those times coming on. But when you've lived with something long enough and you sort of feel like you can like have a sense of humor about it, I mean, it just kind of deflates it. And the whole nothing to fear but fear itself thing is, you know, pat and not 100% true, but if your relationship to your own mental illness is a little bit like, you know, when you're a teenager, you feel like everything's the end of the world. Everything's, right, you know, nothing's like, this is it forever. I'm going to feel like this forever. And as you get older, that's one of the coolest things about getting older for me was like realizing that there's another, that I'm going to come out on the other side of something.
Right. And it's therapy, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It is exposure therapy. And the more you can say, I would love to skip ahead to the part where I'm done with this. Yeah. I think the faster you kind of get there, you know?
Right.
Well, Janet, we want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us here on Radio Labyrinth. And we want to point everybody to IFC to watch Staying Against Evil on Halloween.
And please, you can watch the first two seasons on Hulu, too. So if you want to get caught up.
Yeah, binge the first two seasons before next week on Halloween. And
hell yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's going to run for, what, 3 or 4 weeks? Are they showing back-to-back episodes?
Yeah. We just kind of push them out like BBC episodes. Right. So you can check those out. And, yeah, Fortune Rookie is, I think, an hour total of content, so you can speed through that. It's very bingeable as well. And You're the Worst, God only knows, I guess, in January.
Well, come see us if you're in town again or whatever. If you're here next year for Dragon Con, we'd love to come down and meet you.
I'd love to. I'm so sorry I missed you guys in person. It was really a bummer to have to miss that festival. That's
gone.
It's a really fun one. It's such a special one. So I'll hope to see you guys next year.
All right.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Take care and happy Halloween.
And to you guys.
Thanks, Janet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thanks again.
Two Faces Radio.